Blog Talk Radio.
Kameraden, guten Tag, welcomen. Everyone hearing me just fine? How's the volume? Feel free constructive criticism, anything to comment on the show. I got the chat open, ready to respond. Welcome to a special Eagle's Nest edition of Renegade Broadcasting. I'll be your host, Barry Satoro. No, I'm just kidding. My name is Jason. This is my first radio show, all to myself, so bear with me. A ton to share with you guys and gals. Some radio clips, some great music, and even a song written by yours truly. We'll do that karaoke in just a minute. But for now, let's get it cracking. Let's jump in. I want to get down to some serious business real quick. Some serious business. That meaning not our business, but serious business. This whole Syria thing, this whole World War III, Putin's involved, you know, the big players. Everyone's coming down. This is the big kike showdown. This is the last hoo-ha. Where do we see this? We see this everywhere we go. Syria this, Syria that, Putin this, magazines, the talking heads on television, CNN, CNN, MSNBC, Russia Today, every internet outlet. Has this big juice story ready to just cover our eyes again, ready to just one more shroud over our perception of reality. Personally, I don't think that's what it's about, though. World War III, the Judaico war against the Gentiles, more precisely the white Gentiles, that's already been going on. We're already 30 years, 40 years into that. World War III started, forced integration, mass assimilation. At many, many points, at gunpoint, students, white children forced to integrate into schools. This was a part of a speech delivered by Rabbi Emanuel Rabinovich. This was delivered to the Emergency Council of European Rabbis in Budapest, Hungary. And this was in January 12th, 1952. He said, "Greetings, my children. You have been called here to recapitulate the principal steps of our new program. The goal for which we have striven so concertedly for 3,000 years is at last within our reach. And because its fulfillment is so apparent, it behooves us to increase our efforts and our cautions tenfold. Within 5 years, this program will achieve its objective, the Third World War, which will surpass in destruction all previous contests. This war will end for all time our struggle against the white race. We will open reveal our identity with the races of Asia and Africa. I can state with assurance that the last generation of white children are now being born. Our general commissions will, in the interest of peace and wiping out interracial tensions, forbid the whites to mate with whites. The white women must cohabit with members of the dark races, and the white men with black women. Thus, the white race will disappear. For mixing the dark with the white will be the end of the white man, and our most dangerous enemy will become only a memory. We Jews will embark upon an era of 10,000 years of peace and plenty, the Pax Judaica, and our race will rule undisputed over the earth. Our superior intelligence will easily enable us to retain mastery over a world of dark peoples. Again, that was Rabbi Emanuel Rabinovich. That was in 1952. So it started way back then. Uh, 30, 40 years ago, Open the Floodgates was the famous I forget which senator, some Jew senator said that, open the floodgates. And he was right. They were opened in the 60s, and the flood has not stopped since then. Israel Cohen, and there's a Jew name for you, Israel Cohen. He says, we must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tension. By propounding into the consciousness of dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by the whites, we can mold them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority against the whites, we will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the Negroes. We will aid the Negroes to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause. So how's that for foreshadowing 30, 40 years ago? You know, there's a lot from the horse's mouth. You know, I have a PDF I can link here in a second. 1001 Jewish quotes about Jews from Jews. They're very brazen, and they like to spill the beans, much to their detriment. A few readings from a very important book, I believe, from a blogger and author by the name of Paul Kiersey. And this is from the book Hollywood and Blackface, Black Images in Film from Night of the Living Dead to Thor. Those bastards. In black-run America, Hollywood is one of the primary culture unifiers. Everyone sees and talks about the same films and movies across geographically diverse places, from Bismarck, North Dakota, to Oxford, Mississippi. Filmmakers skillfully manipulate character and dialogue, conflict and action, in ways that allow them to cast positive and negative images. In so doing, filmmakers, Jews, profoundly shape the perceptions their audience hold of different racial groups, which they, the audience, rarely encounter in real life. It is though this constantly and careful manipulation of black characters in popular films that has manufactured a positive representation for all black people. Black fictional images, or what the author refers to as BFI, from the character of Captain Stephen Hiller, played by Will Smith in Independence Day, to Miles Dyson, played by Jill Morton in Terminator 2, from the character of Azeem, played by Morgan Freeman in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, to Terrence Mann, as played by James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams. These and numerous other actors in films have done more to burnish the image of black people in America than all the civil rights activists combined. Indeed, The manipulation of characters like these and numerous others over the years have gone far toward manufacturing perceptions of black people that reality just cannot replicate. Now even Thor, a movie based upon Nordic gods and mythology, has cast black actor Idris Elba as a Northern European deity. Often characters such as these, dubbed by one writer as the numinous Negro, provide moral clarity and guidance, helping the feckless white protagonist to overcome some obstacle or achieve some quest. And thus the positive image of black Americans today that is out of kilter with reality. The author expresses a paradigm that everyone is aware but dare not say for fear of being labeled racist. Television, movies, commercials push an image of Negroes as intelligent scientists, doctors, lawyers, computer and electronics experts, and stable, loving families. The reality is that the average IQ of Negroes is 85, that 50% of them never graduate high school, that their most common job is barber, 70% of the children are born into an illegitimate household, and almost 92% of interracial crime, including half of murders, is caused by this small demographic. Regular people are aware of this, for they see reality shows such as Cops, First 48. They see the thug lifestyle, the rap videos filled with white hate. They see through family members, experience the tragic cost of Negro crime. For example, in 2005, according to the Department of Justice, 37,000 whites were raped by Negroes, while whites raped zero Negroes. This is an astonishing number, equal to the number of fatal car crashes in the United States, equal to the dead from the entire Vietnam War, and it happens every year. YouTube supplies security video of robberies, of murders, of convenience store clerks, offices and stores, shopping centers, the majority committed by Negroes. This leads to a separation of reality between the average experience of the American people in interaction with Negroes and how they are portrayed on the television. The author goes on, "It is impossible to overestimate the power and importance of Hollywood. Rather than simply reflecting culture, it is no exaggeration to suggest that movies have the power to shape the culture itself in ways that other media simply cannot touch. Poetry could be banned without the masses even noticing. And most of us would find it difficult to think of a painting or opera that dramatically shaped our worldview. However, our speech is riddled with movie quotes and references. Most Americans take their models for such concepts as masculinity, beauty, sexiness, fashion, and heroism, not from religion or tradition, but from the movies. Even in the midst of the most profound human dramas, like the destruction inflicted upon New York City on September 11th, 2001, the most common description was that it was like being in a movie. Even having death thrust directly in front of your face, you cannot break the dream machine. Far more than books, even more than music, movies are the key tool by which the American consciousness is shaped. It could be argued that movies ultimately must reflect what is popular, and thus they can only reflect the larger culture. The problem is that Hollywood behaves in ways not explained by the profit motive. Following the incredible financial success of Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, Jon Stewart sarcastically congratulated Mel Gibson for having the quote-unquote courage to promote a movie about Jesus in America. Of course, the irony is that every major movie studio passed on such a project, backed by such a huge star, even before his drunk driving escapades and whatnot, even though it was sure to be a financial success. In the years following September 11, 2001, and in the opening years of the Iraq War, Hollywood gave us Kingdom of Heaven, a history of the Crusades that praised the Muslims and condemned Europeans. Rather than giving audiences what they want to see, Hollywood pushes a specific agenda, even at the cost of profits. When successful, they push the propaganda more subtly, disguising it behind special effects. In the biggest grossing movie of all time, 2009's Avatar, the movie's villain, a Southern military leader, voiced by the man who played Stonewall Jackson in Gods and Generals, he growls, "How does it feel to betray your race?" As the hero in Avatar and numerous other Hollywood movies can tell us, apparently, it feels really, really good. So those are some readings from Hollywood in Blackface. Paul Kiersey does a good blog. I believe it's stuffblackpeopledon'tlike.blogspot.com. If you ever want to check that out, he's got some good articles. One critique I have of Mr. Paul Kiersey, in my 8 months of reading his blogs, railing on about our good friends the Negroes, he has not yet to name the Jew. The J word has not been written down or spoken from mouth or on blog. But besides that, some great research done by Mr. Kiersey. And I want to stress an important point as well. I think advertisements is equally as much Jew programming as any television or movie you would see. And that's where, you know, some of us more aware are kind of looking for the subtle programming and specific agendas. Obviously, the race mixing agenda is number one. The miscegenation agenda is numero uno. That is the main modus operandi. But advertisements, it's all over advertisements, whether it's a car commercial, even down to bubblegum chewing, you know, 10 seconds of Whitey looking like a bubbling retard, not good with women, not intelligent as maybe what Kiersey refers to as the other numinous Negroes that are involved in the situation. So keep your eyes out for this. This is important. This is interesting things to point out. It's all over the movies, every TV show. Whether it's a car commercial, or alcohol, it is World War III. That is where World War III is. It's not going to be Putin in the 1984 Red Dawn movie parachuting mass Russians into America and trying to take over. It's not going to be Assad outgunning everyone, dodging the Jews, coming out heroic. No, I think that's the big Jew distraction. I think that's the big misdirection. They want you to divest energy, money, and most of the cases, your own lives, our brothers' lives, our sons' lives, fighting these Jews' wars, fighting wars for Israel, being used as a proxy army for Israel's domination of the Middle East, subjugation of the Middle East. But our war is going on at home. Our war, our racial war, is going on right here on NBC, MTV, CBS. And that's where it's at. That's where the big ball game is. I'm going to play a little music for you guys, and I'll be back right after this.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
Welcome back, everyone. I got a personal story for you to share. Man, this happened a while ago. I think I was 12 years old. I decided to go to school one day with a black marker. I had a black marker with me. And around, I think it was gym class, I started writing all these swastikas, all these swazis. Terribly drawn, of course, 8-year-old drawn swastikas all over my arms, legs. And of course, after a while, this garnered some attention. At that point, at 8 years old, 12 years old, whatever I was, I didn't have any hateful bone in my body, a spiteful thing towards anyone. But here I am, middle of gym class, drawing swazis on my arms and legs. And the significance of this particular incident is kind of coming to me slowly and slowly. Why was I drawing swastikas on my arms and legs? Well, one of my favorite movies as a child was the Spielberg production, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And in that movie, the swastika is replete throughout the entire thing. Bold, bold symbolism throughout that entire movie. So here I am, recreating what the Jew Spielberg has conjured up. And here I am in the principal's office now. Obviously, here's a young child with swastikas all over his arms and legs. He is, it's time to go to the principal's office. My mother gets called in. She's in sort of a shock. Well, of course, naturally, But I couldn't explain at the time. I couldn't tell him, that was just my social programming. I just watched The Last Crusades every day of my life, all through third and fourth grade. And that's why I'm drawing swastikas on my arm, because I think it's subconsciously I was drawn to it incredibly. I felt like I had to start penning it out, and I did, on my body. Everyone draws, as a child. You get the markers, you get the crayons, you're scrawling all over your body. I was drawing swastikas, and that's fine. That was great. The more I think about this, the more I look back upon it, I think it's pretty damn cool, to be honest. But I did get in a lot of trouble at the time. I was put on the lists. I was suspended, I think, for 2 weeks suspension. And I do specifically remember the principal being almost full Jewish. She gave me the spiel. She gave me the Spielberg rehash propaganda. This is the first time I've even heard about the Holocaust propaganda when I was dragged into the principal's office when I was 8 or so, and told how such an evil symbol that was and how so many people suffered and it was the most horrible thing in the history of the world. The big Shoah. There's Noah business like Shoah business, of course. That was it. Got booted out of school for a few weeks. And that's fine. My mother, my Dutch-German mother, confused. This kid, my kid's a good kid. He's not against anyone, but here he is representing. I thought that was pretty cool. That gained significance as this goes on nowadays. It's interesting. Interesting how we can be so conducive to the manipulation in Jew Hollywood and Jew television. We use the television as the babysitter nowadays, unfortunately. We plop the child, bam, right on the couch. The child's eyes light up from the screen, all the images and special effects and sounds. And that's where it begins. Not actual reality transference. There's no absorption of true reality, only the upside down, the Judaic false reality. The Kenan and Kel, the cool, hip, funny blacks. Anything you want to name. Any show, just any show you can extract some sort of miscegenation programming, some sort of more intelligent Negro than the more slower, dumb-witted white individual. Just bumbling through life, finally meeting people of color, finally getting chock-full boatloads of fresh diversity. Oh, it's a big gulp. Schindler's Shit. Swindler's List. I forget the name of that movie. That was the beginning for me when I started believing in the Holocaust, when my goy heartstrings started to be plucked, and I started. Well, that's when something started to be taken from me. I believe Anne Grant, she said, when we are taught to despise the modes and thinkings of our ancestors, that energy or that passion is unraveled and cannot easily be made up into a new form. And that's kind of what happens when you're taught to hate yourself, when you are infected with the virus of ethnomasochism. Part of you leaves. Part of you is compromised, And it's not a day. It's the programming, the past few decades of programming haven't been, a day camp for us. Or it hasn't been a week. It hasn't been Shark Week for us. It's been every single day. Almost every television channel. Magazines. Comic books. Just flooded. State-sponsored Marxist indoctrination programming into the schools. We're going to do a clip from ex-KGB man Yuri Bemezmov. He's going to talk a little bit about demoralization.
But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow and is divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black. You still cannot change the basic perception and the logical behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And yet these people have been programmed and, as you say, in place, and yeah, who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept. Mm-hmm. These are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country.
Most of them, yes. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, dissidents. Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. This they don't understand, and it will be the greatest shock for them, of course. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's over-fulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camps, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes him, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization.
That was Yuri Bemezmov, ex-KGB, a.k.a. groundwork from Mossad and their intelligence operations. He makes some great points. Says that, you know, after decades and decades of demoralization, thinking, looking down at yourself, looking at your own blood, your skin, and really taking on the board the fact that, yep, we were evil. We're sick in the head. We are unevolved. I can see this in the Spielberg movies and the movies and the television and then in school. And there it is, the sealed fate. I'm going to cue up some music. And I'll be back right after that. Welcome back. I want to get down to some basics, some practical things we can start rolling out, start producing, get our hands dirty. I recommend everyone get a 2 to 3 gigabyte hard drive. And I recommend every picture, every post you come across, article, video, whether it be on YouTube or wherever else, audio clip, you save it, you download it, you snatch it from the internet and store it on the hard drive. If anyone's been paying attention, they've been pushing this meme, this false flag, cyber terrorism, these North Korean hijackers or the super Chinese are hacking into everyone's systems, and they're going to have to shut down the internet so they can protect us all. And what did they put in front of us already? The Snowdens, the Julian Assanges. Now a major Hollywood movie is being made, or no, it's already made. It's being advertised right now about Julian Assange and his quote-unquote findings. Well, since there's a since the Jewish Hollywood movie budget is behind this, we can safely assume that Julian Assange doesn't have viable information. You know, maybe some truth to a lot of the material he has, quote-unquote, revealed, but that's just a story. I believe it's just a story, along with the Snowden. But I believe these are to cover some of the real hackers that have been involved in all this, maybe even some white nationalist hackers who have been doing their best, working hard to take down anything they can, infiltrate anywhere, whether it be Israeli intelligence, the big banks, Federal Reserve banks, seeing if they can ruin Ben Shalom Bernanke's day. But save as much as you can, because this false flag terrorism, you know, it's being pushed. The internet kill switch, they say. They keep saying this internet kill switch, you know. Oh, thank God. The crypto mulatto Muslim has his finger ready to save us all from evil cyber terrorism. He's ready to cut it all off. Fortunately for us, the internet is the last vestige of free speech we have. This was brought up, I believe, in the last roundtable. It's what we got left. Well, that's until we take over the radio stations. Kind of like Golden Dawn did. They stormed the Marxist radio, one of the Marxist radio stations down there in Greece. Pretty much kicked them out. Kicked them out of the building. But get a printer. Print multiple copies, you know, PDFs, hard information. Even think about yourself, your family, personal memorabilia. You know, what do you have? What do you got? What have you been hiding this whole time? You know, make some scans of it. You know, make it viral. You know, contribute to the big puzzle we got going on here. Self-sufficiency. We're going to have to eventually all do it if we want to survive. And that is growing our own food. Becoming undetached from the genetically modified organisms that they're pumping out. All the major grocery stores, you know, these are all centralized now. These are all Jew-owned, and they are centralized. So at any time, at any moment, the quote-unquote kill switch for production of food that you rely on every week or every day, most of us, it's not going to be there. And what is there right now will only be there maximum 4 days. You must think of the families, you know, your children, you know, no more Mickey D's trip to shove down Jew industry beef. No more reliance on that. That's okay anyways. Most of it is fake food. Most of it is, like I said before, genetically modified. Microwave. All these preservatives. Go for sun food. Go for greener food. Food that has touched the sun. When a food is frozen or if it's microwaved, the organic molecules and minerals, the vitamins, the essentials to that food it's gone. It's zapped away. If it's frozen, it dies. So don't worry about how your plot of land looks anymore. No more trimming it like the Home Depot commercials. Start carving up your land. Throw some seeds down there. Learn how to do this shit. I'm going to have to. I'm not ready to go out just yet. I'm not ready to start. If a type of collapse will happen, this is what it's going to come down to. hunting, self-cultivation, and if you have family, 2 to 3 children, 4 to 6 children, this is going to be incredibly important. I'm going to throw in some comic relief for us. This gentleman is, I think his name is Bill Burr. Bill Burr, this is off the Comedy Central skit. He's got some good things to say. Be back in just a minute.
No. Rented that movie Pride recently. Have you guys seen that movie? Anybody see that? It's about the first all-black swim team and the difficulties they had to go through being the first all-black swim team. Let me ask you a question. How many of those white people are evil movies are they going to make? It's like it's all the way down to swimming. You know? I'm starting to run out of white guilt, you know? No, it's like those movies. They started off unbelievable. Started off with Roots, right? White guilt was at an all-time high. I could barely even watch it. I'm like, dude, I got it. My ancestors are evil. Okay, please. Please turn the channel, dude. Please turn the channel. They still hitting them. Turn the channel. This is going to be on all week. Jesus Christ, turn the channel. Then in the 80s, there was like a football movie. Then like Cuba Gooding wanted to be like a scuba diver. Remember that? And now it's all the way down to swimming. And I got to admit, I don't think I give a. You know, I'm not trying to be a dick, but it's a recreational activity. Plus, I've been in pools. There's been black people in the pool. You know, I never saw any white guy like trying to like prevent people from getting into the pool. Like, are they just like making this shit up? I'm not being a dick here either. Okay, just to clarify, you know, I just want anybody coming up to me after the show, you know, I was thinking it, and then you. I'm not saying that I don't think black people should be allowed to put on some Speedos and go for a dip. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying these movies, like the characters aren't even believable. Like they always have to have like that, the over-the-top, uninhibited white racist character, you know? You know that guy, he's a guy like, he's supposed to represent all the white evil, you know? He's like the dude they always have like screaming during the movie trailer. They'd be like, they were the first all-black swim team. Get out! In his forehead. He's just screaming, not even looking around, you know? Dude, it's ridiculous. Real racism is quiet. It's subtle. People look around first. They make sure the coast is clear. There's disclaimers. Like, dude, you know I'm not racist, but these insert group name followed by up conversation, right? That's how it goes down. Not just some guy. Just standing up there, I've seen girls in the pool. You approve of this? I work at the bank. Can I be fired immediately, please?
And hey, welcome back. That was Bill Burr, if anyone wants to give that a re-listen. Bill Burr from Comedy Central. I want to talk about us for a little bit. Us Lynx. Us, Elmer's Glue, Pasty White Devils. Lynx in the Chain. There's a disease I like to call, it's called the Special Snowflake Syndrome. I believe the New Age, all this New Age, you are God type stuff, you know, Zen Buddhism, Enlightenment type deals, you know, all these false enlightened buffoons running around, believing them to be special snowflakes, believing them to be special individuals, buying into their personal story, maybe a little too much, not aware of the larger picture in which they are a part of, the larger spiritual picture and the larger biological picture they are part of. Tom Wolfe comments on The Link in the Chain. Tom Wolfe. He says, quote, the husband
and wife who sacrificed their own ambitions and their material assets in order to provide a better future for their children. The soldier who risks his life or perhaps consciously sacrifices it in battle. The man who devotes his life to some struggle for his people that he cannot possibly be won in his lifetime. People like this who conceive themselves, however unconsciously, as part of a great biological stream, just as something of their ancestor lives on in them, so will something of them live on in their children, or in their people, their race, their community, for childless people. 2, conduct their lives and try to arrange their post-mortem affairs with concern for how the great stream is going to flow. Most people, historically, have not lived their lives as if thinking, I have only one life to live. Instead, they have lived as if they are living their ancestors' lives and their offspring's lives, and perhaps their neighbors' lives as well. They have seen themselves inseparable from the great tide of chromosomes of which they are created and which they pass on. The mere fact that you are only going to be here a short time and would be dead soon enough did not give you the license to try to climb out of the stream and change the natural order of things. The Chinese, in ancestor worship, have literally worshipped the great tide itself and not any god or gods. For anyone to renounce the notion of serial immortality in the West or the East has been to defy what seems like a law of nature. So I hate to break it to you. You are not a special snowflake. You've been here before. Your type of character, all your opinions, what you say, it's all been done before. It's there. But at the same time, in the same token, the paradoxical situation of it is we're all sort of these special snowflakes. We, you know, the combination of your biological gatherings will never be replicated again. Your influences, your personal experiences, these are all one-in-time offers. They're all for you. So, in a way, we are special snowflakes. The author goes on, mythic consciousness, as defined by man, a little thunder rock there, a pervasive awareness of oneself, not only as an individual, but also as the temporary manifestation or embodiment of an age-old and ongoing continuity. Individual life is part of a greater continuum, the transient incarnation of a sequence of ghost-like cells, antecedents and descendants, extending back into the past and forward into the future. One is a part of a process or procession, and it is to this, not to any particular ephemeral form at any given moment, that one's obligation lies. And from such a perspective, death is almost incidental. Indeed, death, and especially death through noble sacrifice, is less an end than an integral phase of the process. We'll see. You know, so there you go. Quit worrying about your story and your scary death. You know, maybe that's happened. You've done death. Maybe we've done death. The quick transition. As soon as you're done, you're picking it back up again for your people. You're another one of your peoples. You're part of it. You've contributed. My favorite authors, Julius Evola. He says, a radical destruction of the bourgeois who exists in every man is possible in these disrupted times more than any other. In these times, a man can find himself again, can really stand in front of himself, and get used to watching everything according to the look of the other shore, so as to return to importance, to essential significance, which should be so in any normal existence. The relationship between the life and the more than life between the human and the eternal, between the short-lived and the incorruptible. We are but links in the chain, and this chain must not be broken. Our stock, our various biological stocks, our Indo-European Aryan tribe stocks have taken a great loss, taken many chains unlinked, broken, snapped. And these aren't the play school type of links, the colored links, you know, where you can just by hand clink on and off, you know, clink them all together. Once it's broken, it's broken. You're thrown back into the great ocean, lost. And your people suffer as well. Anything you do in your life, whatever you do in your life, and everything you have done in your life, whether you knew it or not, has been for your people or against them. That's it. It's really black and white. You've either been striving for your people, or you've been inhibiting them, calling them racist, putting on the suit of ethnomasochism, wearing that around to your colored friends so you'll join the superficial cool kid group. Turned out it wasn't worth it. Turned out you were more than just a little special snowflake with a special story. It's much more than that. Because many links have been broken, here we find our current situation. Well, we got quite a thunderstorm going along here. And I got the perfect music for it, so I'm going to play a little music and I'll be jumping back on. Thank you.
back in action. This is your host, Jason, back in the Eagle's Nest. We got some perfect weather going on over here. Thor's just throwing it down, some hardcore lightning strikes. Loving the atmosphere, absolutely loving the atmosphere. All right, let me take, looks like we got a caller here. See if I can take this call. Hello, sir. Are you there? Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hey, sir. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello. I'm Alex Jones. I'm a radio and television host based in Austin, Texas. And for many years, I've been exposing the criminal activities of the global elite, also known as the New World Order.
Okay. Well, let me stop you right there real quick. We like to call it the Jew World Order, for one, Alex. And there's really nothing new about this order. It's quite old, actually.
Yes.
Yep. Very old, actually. Well, while you're on the line with us, Alex, I have a few bones to pick with you, actually. Quite a few bones, but I'll only get into a couple of them right now. Is that okay with you?
Go ahead.
You won co-host Alex Bermez. Someone had called into his radio show talking about Jewish influence in, I believe, Hollywood and banking. And Jason Bermez proceeded to tell him that people like him should be castrated and shot, people like him, whoever thinks that the Jews control Hollywood and they're into banking. And so it seems you and your co-host are either super doofuses, you know, big old retards, or you're purposely pumping out disinformation, counterintelligence.
It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter if you just say I'm wrong. I happen to have all the documents.
Well, Alex, let me pick some more bones. You're married to a Jewish woman named Violet Nichols, in which you have three children. You're funded by at least 31 Jewish sponsors and advertisers who financially support your radio station and your websites.
You chicken neck.
Let me finish, Alex. Your flagship radio station, KLBJ AM in Austin, Texas, is owned by MS Communications, a media conglomerate based in Indianapolis, Indiana. The founder, chairman, president, and CEO of MS Communications is the Zionist Jeffrey Smoylan. Your radio show broadcasts on Sirius XM Radio. The chairman of Sirius XM Radio is the Jew Eddie Hartenstein. The CEO of Sirius XM Radio is the Jew Mel Kamarazin. The president of Sirius XM Radio is the Jew Scott Greenstein. Of the six executive officers of Sirius XM Radio, the five are Jews.
On and on and on and on and on and on and on.
You're right. We could go on. Especially talking about your Jewish attorney named Elizabeth Morgan, who's also the attorney for Holly Lev Bronfman, the sister of Edgar Bronfman, Jr. Thus, there is only 2 degrees of separation between you, Mr. Alex Jones, and the Bronfman family, one of the most wealthiest, most influential Jewish Zionist families in North America. Your employee, Molly Maroney, the managing editor of InfoWars magazine, your main disinformation HUD, is a former intern of STRAT-4, a private Israeli intelligence agency based right there in Austin, Texas, which has been linked to Central Intelligence Agency and, of course, the Mossad.
The founder and CEO of Stratfor is the Zionist Jew, George Freeman.
That's the problem. So I guess in a way you're right, sir. I get nasty, I get mad, and for that I apologize.
Well, I suggest you do a little research. I suggest you to start researching as soon as you get off the line here.
Yeah, let me just Google it. Let me just Google it myself. You keep talking.
No, well, that's pretty much all I have for you, AJ. You've kind of been outed on a large scale nowadays. A lot of people are waking up to the disinformation projects, such as your InfoWars project over there. So I was saying before, you and your ilk are either some of the dumbest people, news reporters, news agency on the planet, or you're acting. You're an actor. You know what you're doing exactly. You put on the face. You put on the act. You regurgitate false information, sometimes true, sometimes not, sometimes viable. But with that, I'm going to let you go. Anything to add to before I cut you off?
I can't talk to you, man. I mean, look, when you were 2 years old, they set you in front of a television in your dirty diapers. You watched 6-8 hours of TV.
Well, we talked about that, Alex.
Wired properly, and frankly, talking to you is an insult to humanity.
Well, we talked.
Bye-bye.
All right. See you later, Alex. So, well, if I were to say I was honored, I'd be lying. That was Alex Jonestein there. Right. I'll read this epitaph that I found. I believe this was on, what's his name, General or Colonel Covington or Cobra Commander Covington up in the Northwest Front. This is on his blog, but it was very nice, actually. It was an epitaph that was found carved in a stone in the Swiss Alps, in one of the early Gothic runic alphabets. Archaeologists and scholars are not certain how old it is, but they believe it dates from the 5th century AD. It says, "Traveler, short is my say. Stop and read these runes. This somber slab covers a beautiful woman. Her name was Juhiza. She was my light and my only love. What I wished, she wished also. What I shunned, she shunned also. Good she was, and chaste, loyal, discreet. She walked nobly and spoke kindly. Traveler, I have finished. Go." I thought that was real special. Special snowflake status. I'm not sure if everyone here could be speaking to a good bulk of the choir. I'm aware of that. But who knows, some Pastor Manning. Pastor Manning has always some interesting things to be saying. Got a particular clip from Mr. Manning. Let me give it a find real quick. Cue it up. He's talking about St. Trayvon Martin Luther King, one of the recently slain coons. Well, maybe that was a year and a half ago, but what is it? I think it's, 500 murders in Chicago every year? 500 blacks, you know, take the fall in Chicago, and then, you know, of course, something that resembles evil whitey, finally a chance. And see, it worked to a certain extent. The memes were resurrected, the Rodney King white on black violence that unfortunately a majority of people think is the majority of the situation. Like, we have KKK members rolling around in trucks lynching blacks. Like, that's something that's happening currently, or
is, you know, this is just this is just Jew false reality. Jew false reality. But Pastor Manning, he brings an important question to the table. So do you want me to call George Zimmerman or not?
Even Hussein Obama said yesterday he's Trayvon. Well, I got to say he is. I already said he was, because when he was 17, he was smoking pot. He was in the Toon Gang. They smoked pot. Yeah, he's trouble too. So, yeah, I guess he is Trayvon. His daddy ran off, knocked up his mama and ran off it too and left him and sent it back home to the grandmama. So, yeah, you are Trayvon Obama. Yeah, you are. You're just like him. You're just like him. First truth you've ever spoke. You better go back check with your father, the devil, because you're in here telling the truth. You are just like Trayvon. And your daddy's just like Tracy Martin. I mean, your daddy running around there knocking all them women up there in Kenya, not married, got a whole slew of children just like Tracy Martin, got them all over Miami. Yeah, you just like Trayvon Hussein. Anyway, you 17-year-old boys. Well, Pastor Man, I like you, you know, you say. But he shouldn't have shot that boy. Okay. Next time somebody like Trayvon catch you in the park or at school or basketball game and begin to beat the living daylight, begin to beat the black off of you, I'm going to stand there and watch. Do you want George Zimmerman or not? While he's beating your head into the cement. Do you want George Zimmerman or not? While he's whipping your head, kicking your behind, punching in your nose. When do you want me to call George Zimmerman? When? Black boys! But you'll let Trayvon beat you. I've never seen anything like you people. I've never seen anything as hypocritical. Hey, Al Sharpton, would you get on the elevator in the Martin Luther King Jr. housing development? A place of infestation and rats and roaches, poverty pimps, welfare cheats, welfare queens, food stamp kings. Would you get on the elevator at 10 o'clock with somebody with a hoodie on? Hell, Sharpton! What a big phony.
Some good questions. Not just Al Sharpton, not just those corrupt psychopaths, hypocrites, bastards. Not just for them. Anyone else? You going to get on a elevator midnight with a black mestizo character hooded? Is that, you know? Fortunately, the movies told us this is okay, you know. But we're knowing better. We're learning better nowadays. What's the slogan? What's the main slogan? Around blacks, never relax. Zimmerman didn't relax. He relaxed a little bit. He got caught. He was on the ground. He was on the ground on his way to becoming the next victim of black violence. But what he decided to do is take his life in his own hands. Well, take his gun into his own hands. And bust a cap. But the whole story, whether real or not, fulfilled its purpose. It was to resurrect certain memes. Of course, what is the name? Trayvon Martin. St. Trayvon Martin Luther King. St. Lutheran. St. Martin Luther. Rodney King, the sequel. Just more evidence on how evil and racist white people are. We're shooting Negroes carrying Skittles and watermelon fruit juice cocktail at any moment we can. This is the illusion. This is the propping up. You see, lies, the truth stands on its lies. They need support or they'll crumble. They'll fall away. What the Jew does have going for him is his money and material assets. Imagine if you yourself had just a fraction of Jew money at your disposal. Here, I'll give you $1 billion. Here, change the world. I have $1 billion for you. Just one, not 6 billion, not 8 billion. I have just $1 billion I'm going to give to you. Change the world. Here you go. There you go. Do you think you would have any impact? Do you think you could maybe get some things printed out, distributed, things bought, taken over, conglomerated, centralized? You know, trillions of dollars in Hollywood, off going money. Trillions of dollars just in Hollywood. We'll go into video games, EA Sports, Electronic Arts, THC, all Jew companies. Almost from A to Z, video games, whether it be online World of Warcraft, having the goy sit on his ass hours a day, paying $15, $20 a month to project his energy and his will to power towards some sort of fictional escapade. And that's so key, that's so crucial. Directing the goy's energy, you know, our natural, healthy drives, our will to power, to possess, to reproduce, to carry on, to continue the links in the chain. This very naturalistic instinct has been corrupted, tainted. We were taught, no reproducing for white man. He's impotent. He's incestual. That's what people of color always say. A white man is incestual. Which translates into, no, you don't want to miscegenate with us people of color, so we're going to call you incest. Backwards Hicks. The Jew South Park says gingers have no souls. I always see, probably every day, people rehashing, regurgitating some junk, garbage, nonsense that South Park spewed forth the night before, or the bastard corrupt liberal Jew Jon Stewart from The Daily Show. But they're hip and they're cool, and by knowing certain parts of a movie, certain parts of a television show that millions of people have seen, you are part of the cool class. Your social status is secure because, hey, you're not racist. This is from a great speech from Alex Krategic. Hits on some key points. He says, instead of individualism, we think individuality. Instead of liberty, we think autonomy. Instead of equality, we think quality. Instead of brotherhood, we think kinship. And instead of universal, homogenized mass societies of alienated strangers who feel no loyalty towards each other unless there's an economic interest, we think of a vast mosaic of organic societies, each with a distinct character, engaged in friendly collaboration. But there is one area that has not been sufficiently emphasized, and that's the area of moral philosophy.
Many people out there find our general outlook appealing on many levels. Many people out there think our observations and analysis are correct. Many people out there are repelled by liberal, egalitarian, universalistic, globalist ideas, and would love to see them replaced with something else. But they are afraid of expressing it. They fear that if they say something that might in some way be misconstrued as slightly illiberal or somewhat inegalitarian, they might be called a name. And the idea of being called that name that begins with R or F or even a scarier letter, makes them very uncomfortable. And it's not just because they fear for their jobs or their lives, because oftentimes they're among friends or among family or even alone. And they still worry about being called a name. They still worry about friends or family members, even the privacy of their own brains, thinking of them in terms of that name. And the reason is that although our outlook appeals to them, although they think that our assessments are correct, they don't believe in the moral goodness of our ideas. Deep down, they fear that thinking in our particular way makes them bad people. And that's because the present disposition in the West is predicated on a moral philosophical system that enshrines equality as an absolute moral value. And they've been trained to believe in the absolute moral goodness of equality, even if equality doesn't personally appeal to them, even if equality doesn't tally with what they observe in everyday life. Special guest, the Prophet Muhammad. The truth all the way back in 1971.
And another thing, when you say integration, it comes on the inner marriage too, right? All
right.
Being together.
Right.
And I'm sure no intelligent white person watching this show, no intelligent white man in his or her right white mind, want black boys and black girls marrying their white sons and daughters, and in return introducing their grandchildren as half brown, kinky-haired black people.
I would object to that.
Well, you would, but a lot of them would.
But I'm sure a lot of people would. No, it's just a
what I'm trying to say is this. What I'm trying to say is this. You don't have it. You say you don't, but you don't have it. You really ain't going to have it. You're on the show if you got to say that. But
that's not true.
Why would you want to do that?
Because I don't think I'm any different from you, you see.
Yeah, we much different.
I mean, I think society's made us different.
You know we're different. We're all together.
But society's made us different.
No, not society. God made us different.
No, we're just human beings. He made all of us.
We all, listen, bluebirds fly with bluebirds, red birds want to be with red birds. Listen, tell me when I'm wrong. Pigeons want to be with pigeons.
Listen, tell me when I'm wrong.
They don't have intelligence, but yet they stay together. We should have more intelligence than them, right? Bluebirds are with bluebirds. They all are birds, but they've got different cultures. The eagles like to hang out in the mountains. The buzzards like to fly around the desert. The bluebird like to fly around the trees.
Let me say, the problem is a buzzard mating with a sparrow, wouldn't it?
I don't see no black and white couples in England or America walking around proud holding their children.
That's because society.
And they going out.
That's society's fault. We're going to educate people around.
Well, life is too short for me to be very tense and ill for something like that. I'm never going to be my own. I have a beautiful daughter, beautiful wife. They look like me. We're all happy and I don't have no trouble. I ain't that much in love with no woman to go through all that hell. Ain't no one woman that good. Spot up yourself and kill your race. You're a You will hate of your people if you don't want to stay who you are. You shame what God made you. God didn't make no mistake. He made us all like we
were. I think that's a philosophy of despair.
Despair?
I really do.
It ain't no despair.
Yeah, I do.
Number one, it ain't no woman. No woman on this whole earth, not even a black woman in Muslim countries, can please me and cook for me and socialize and talk to me like my American black woman. No woman, at last is a white woman, can really identify with me and my feelings and the way I act and the way I talk. And you can't take no Chinese man and give him no Puerto Rican woman and holler about we're in love and you're emotionally in love physically, but really they're not happy because she's going to hear some Puerto Rican music, he's going to hear some Chinese music. And they're going to be clashing all the time. It's just nature. You can do what you want, but it's nature to want to be with your own. I want to be with mine. I love my.
The Prophet Muhammad himself, a lover of his people. You're a hater of your people if you don't want to stay the same. Who want to spot up yourself? Kill your race. The Prophet Muhammad himself. And this is in the 70s, back in the 70s. This is when the enlightened leftists starting to merge, bubble out, gain high positions of power, such as that liberal bastard in interviewing Muhammad Ali back in the 70s, counteracting Muhammad Ali's racist propaganda right on the spot. God made us all the same, mantras. We've heard them all before, decades of them. God made us all the same. We're all equal. We have a fair shot. We're just human beings. No race but the human race. It is a race. It's a race to survive, propagate, possess truth, beauty, and power. The will to power. And he was right. Back then, there weren't many black and white couples walking around proud. They knew the stigma was still the natural stigma against such miscegenation was still kind of apparent, but it was breaking down. The Jew illusion, the twisting of reality was beginning to take hold. Nowadays, there are numerous, plenty of proud black and white couples walking around. But this pride exists only in their twisted minds. They see things like the Singer Seal and one of the most beautiful blonde women on earth, Heidi Klum. Oh. Finally, Heidi Klum got her some nigger dick. And she spit out some troll-looking half-breed. But it's on OK Magazine, so I guess it's OK. It's on People's Magazine, so I guess these are real and regular people. It's on Newsweek Magazine. This is legit news. Looks like we're finally evolving as a society. Women have been liberated. They are free. Now if they want, they're feening some nigger dick, and go right after it. And you will not be walking around unproud. For now, there is backup. You got backup. What is it, the recent Cheerios commercial with the mulatto baby and the controversy that caused, and then there was some sort of group that emerged. Of course, Jew nonsense, Jew actors. We are the 15%, I believe it was. 50% of families, miscegenation families. We are the 15% who racially mix. Okay. That was kind of a ploy on the we are the 99% type deal of the
Occupy Jew Street fiasco. But that was resurrected, and we are the 15% of proud white and black or white and Latino families who, in our special snowflake syndrome, have thrown out both our race and the races of our spouses. We have unbroken the link in the chain and tossed it aside. Now maybe we can be on Newsweek. Maybe we can be on OK Magazine. Miscegenation no longer a sin. Started in the 60s and 70s with the Luciferian mass propaganda, as the Italian comrades say, propaganda. All you need is love. That's it? All we need is love? Are you sure? Okay. Well, I've heard that for the past 40 years, playing on every day, every radio station. All you need is love. Love is all we need. That's it. Not pride. Not awareness. Not healthy separation. But just love. Just love. That's it. I think it was Euripides. Not sure if I'm saying that right. He said, when love is in excess, it brings a man no honor and no worthiness. But we're onto it nowadays. We're on the propaganda. We're countering it. One thing I had to do was remove Ebonics from my language. Listening to rap in the younger years. MTV, NBC, CBS. Picking up the false idea that, well, if you want to be cool or intelligent, or no, not intelligent. If you want to be cool or hip or gain social status within a particular group, you kind of have to act like a retard. And a retarded nigger is even better. Spitting out half words, half concepts, degraded language, reduced to grunts.
Oh, what? I don't mind.
Unrepeatable. Lost. See, language is the scaffolding of thought. And sloppy language leads to sloppy thought. Throw a quick song for us. The German National Socialism song, old school. The storm breaks out. Back in action, back on the Eagle's Nest. I'm going to jump on this new age disinfo bandwagon. David Sticky Icky Ike. Has anyone heard of David Ike? David Icky Ike? Sticky Icky? In his lizard stories, his shape-shifting stories. Gathering tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, crowds, selling books, movies, more reality viruses. But for a lot of people, this is a lot easier.
to take on board the fact that, no, your race isn't dying out. It's just the aliens. It has nothing to do with race. You know, no race but the human race. It's the aliens. It's the shapeshifters. They made a movie. Jew Hollywood made a movie. They live. They were trying to tell us, man. The shapeshifters, they're coming. Shapeshifting kikes, maybe. I'll buy that. Shapeshifting kites like, what's her name? Barbara Spector, who talks about the genocide of Europeans and how we need to accept our own downfall. She says Europe will not be the monolithic mass society as it once were. We have to renounce our evil ways, our evil, expansive, technological, productive, high culture ways, and give it all up. Let the flood comest. Open the floodgates. But a lot of it's backfired. There's a lot of wrench in their plans nowadays, particularly this radio station, Renegade Broadcasting. Incredible shows I've heard. Just lit my ass on fire. Got me rolling. As well as the many brave Holocaust deniers. David Irving and Ernst Zundel. Titans of their time. We stand on these people's shoulders. You know, Where would we be without someone like a David Irving or a Dr. William Pierce? Hello, I'm Dr. William Pierce. We stand on the shoulders of these giants. We can carry this torch. The information's there. You can go over this stuff all day and still be 1% through it. It's decades, centuries of egalitarian, liberal, kind of the splinter cell in the white race, affecting our natural tendencies to, reproduce, have more than two children. The birth rates in most white countries is just under 2.0, which means in about a generation, you won't be able to come back from that. The rising tide of color. Most minorities in white countries have birth rates higher than under 2.0. You have to have two kids or more, to replace yourself. That's the law. There's where your immortality lies, within the work of your race, for your race, and in your children, and your children's children. The link on the chain, not the multicolored chain links that we played with when we were toddlers, and we can easily snap them back off. Multicolored chain links. Nope. This is not the way of things. This is not how we're supposed to be run through it. So we got to start manipulating culture ourselves. Changing the culture. Speaking of changing the culture, I have a track I recorded earlier. I was going to do this live. I was going to do some karaoke live. Not against it. But I do have lyrics in the chat right quick, to the tune of I Saw the Light by Hank Williams. This is a culturally improved, non-impoverished version. I saw the cut by yours truly.
I wandered so aimless, life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Odin came like the thunder in the night. Hail, Woden, I saw the kite.
Everyone now, everyone. I saw the kite, I saw the kite. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, God, I saw the kite. Someone had mentioned earlier when I posted lyrics when the video was coming up, we have no Jewish funding over here. We don't got millions and billions of dollars to just toss around, do whatever we want, manipulate reality however we want. So the video is going to be a little bit. But I think we'll end the show on that note. Hail Wotan, I saw the kike. I appreciate everyone bearing with me. This has been The Eagle's Nest with Jason, and I might see you guys again soon. Who knows? But I appreciate everyone listening. Appreciate Kyle letting me do this thing. Auf Wiedersehen.